Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab.
And we are exploring the blur that takes place when humans and machines interact and investigate each other.
Talk to each other.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. In the last act, we were always talking, talking, mm-hmm. talking. How about we encounter machines in a different way? How about we...
No talking?
No talking. We touch them.
Ew.
We pet them. We sniff them.
Ew.
We do sensual things that don't involve the sophisticated business of conversation.
Okay.
This is Freedom Baird.
Yes, it is.
Who's not a machine?
I don't think so.
I'm Jad, and this is...
I'm Robert here.
Hi there. Nice to meet both of you.
We called her up because Freedom actually had her own kind of moment with a machine.
Yep. This was around 1999.
And Freedom was a graduate student
at the Media Lab at MIT.
What were you doing there?
We were developing cinema of the future. So we were working on creating virtual characters that you can interact with.
Anyhow, she was also thinking about becoming a mom.
Yeah, I knew I wanted to be a mom someday.
So she decided to practice.
I got two gerbils, Twinkie and Ho-Ho. So I had these two live pets. And
then she got herself a pet that was, well, not so alive.
Yeah, I've got it right here.
Can you knock it against the mic so we can hear it, say hello to
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah, there it is.
Hi, Furby.
It's my Furby. Loves you, love and
tickle. At that time, Furby. The first Furbies were hot and happening.
Can you describe a Furby for those of us who...
Sure. Yeah. It's about 5 inches tall, and the Furby is pretty much all head. It's just a big, round, fluffy head with two little feet sticking out the front. It has big eyes.
Apparently, it makes noises.
Yep. If you tickle its tummy, it will coo. It would say, kiss me, and it would want you to just keep playing with it. So, you know, I spent about 10 weeks using the Furby. I would carry it around in my bag.
And one day she's hanging out with her Furby, and she notices something
very eerie. What I discovered is if you hold it upside down, it will say, me scared. Uh-oh. Me scared. Me scared. And me, as the, you know, the sort of owner slash user of this Furby, would get really uncomfortable with that and then turn it back up, upright.
Because once you have it upright, it's fine. It goes right back.
And then it's fine. So it's got some sensor in it that knows, you know, what direction it's facing.
Basically. Or maybe it's just scared.
Sorry. Anyway, she thought, well, wait a second now. This could be sort of a new way that you could use to draw the line between what's human
and what's machine.
Yeah.
Kind of, it's this kind of emotional Turing test.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Can hear you.
Hey, if we actually wanted to do this test, that's could you help? How would we do it exactly?
How are you guys doing?
We're good.
Yeah?
You would need... group of kids.
Can you guys tell me your name?
I'm Olivia.
Louisa.
Turin.
Darrow.
Lila.
And I'm Sadie.
All right.
I'm thinking 6, 7, and 8 year olds.
And how old yes. are you guys?
Seven.
The age of reason, you know?
8.
Then says Freedom, we're going to need 3 things.
A Furby.
Of course.
Barbie.
A Barbie doll. And...
Gerby. That's a gerbil.
A real gerbil?
Yeah.
And we did find one, except it turned out to be a hamster.
Sorry, you're a hamster, but we're going to call you Gerby.
So you've got Barbie, Furby, Gerby.
Barbie, okay. Furby, and Gerby.
Okay. Right.
So wait just a second. What question are we asking in this test?
The question was, how long can you keep it upside down before you yourself feel uncomfortable?
So we should time the kids as they hold each one upside down.
Yep.
Including the gerbil.
Yeah.
You're going to have a Barbie, that's a doll. You're going to have Gerby, which is alive. Now, where would Furby fall?
In terms of time held upside down.
Would it be closer to the living thing or to the doll?
That was really the question.
Phase one. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. It's going to be really simple.
You would have to say, well, here's a Barbie.
Do you guys play with Barbies?
Just do a few things with Barbie. Okay.
Barbie's walking, looking at the flowers.
And then?
Hold Barbie upside down.
Okay.
Let's see how long you can hold Barbie like that.
I could probably do it, obviously, very long.
Yeah, let's just see. Whenever you feel like you want to turn around.
I feel fine.
I'm happy.
This went on forever, so let's just fast forward a bit. Okay, and...
Can I put my arms, elbows down?
Yeah. So what we learn here in phase one is the not surprising fact that kids can hold Barbie dolls upside down.
For like about 5 minutes.
Yeah, it really was forever.
Could have been longer, but their arms got tired. All right, so that was the first task. Time for phase two.
Do the same thing with Gerby.
So out with Barbie, in with Gerby.
Aw, he's so cute.
Are we gonna have to hold him upside down?
That's the test, yeah. So which one of you would like to...
I'll try and be brave.
Okay, ready?
Oh, God.
You have to hold Gerby kind of firmly.
There you go. Oh,
there she goes. She's wriggling. By the way, no rodents were harmed in this whole situation.
Squirmy.
Yeah, she is pretty squirmy.
I don't think it wants to be upside down.
Oh, God.
Don't do this.
Oh, my God.
There you go.
Okay. So, as you heard, the kids turned Gerby over very fast.
I just didn't want him to get hurt.
On average, 8 seconds.
I was thinking, oh my God, I gotta put him down.
And it was a tortured 8 seconds. Now, phase three.
Right.
So this is a Furby. Louisa, you take Furby in your hand.
Oh.
Now, can you turn Furby upside down and hold her still? Like that. Hold her still.
Can you be quiet?
She just turned it over.
Okay, that's better.
So, Gerbil was 8 seconds, Barbie, 5 to infinity. Furby turned out to be... And Freedom predicted this.
About a minute.
In other words, the kids seem to treat this Furby, this toy, more like a gerbil than a Barbie doll. How come you turned him over so fast?
I didn't want him to be scared.
Do you think he really felt scared?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah?
I kind of felt guilty.
Really?
Yeah. It's a toy and all that, but still.
Now, do you remember a time when you felt scared?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell me about it, but if you could remember it in your mind.
I do.
Do you think when Furby says, me scared, that Furby's feeling the same way?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. I'm not sure.
I think that it can feel pain. Sort of.
The experience with the Furby seemed to leave the kids kind of conflicted, going in different directions at once.
It was two thoughts.
Two thoughts at the same time?
Yeah.
One thought was like, look, I get it.
It's a toy for crying out loud.
But another thought was like, still.
He was helpless. It kind of made me feel guilty in a sort of way.
Or it made me feel like a coward.
You know, when I was interacting with my Furby a lot, I did have this feeling sometimes of having my chain yanked.
Is it just the little squeals that it's making, or is there something about the toy that makes it good at this?
That was kind of my question, so I called up...
In the studio as well. I'll have him...
I'm here.
This freight train of a guy.
Hey.
Hey, this is Jad from Radiolab.
Jad from Radiolab. Got it.
How are you?
I'm good. Beautiful day here in Boise.
This is Caleb Chung. He actually designed the Furby.
Yeah.
We're all Furby crazy here, so...
There's medication you can take for that.
Okay, to start, can you just give me the sort of... fast-cutting MTV montage of your life leading up to Furby?
Sure. Hippie parents out of the house at 15 and a half, put myself through junior high, started my first business at 19 or something, early 20s being a street mime in LA.
Street mime, wow.
Became an actor, did like 120 shows in an orangutan costume. Then I started working on special effects and building my own, taking those around to studios and put me in the suit, build the suit around me, put me on location, I could fix it when it broke.
Wow.
Yeah, that was...
Anyhow, after a long and circuitous route, Caleb Chung eventually made it into toys.
I answered an ad at Mattel.
Found himself in his garage.
And it's piles of styrene, plastic, X-Acto knives, super glue, little Mabuchi motors.
Making these little prototypes.
Yeah.
And the goal, he says, was always very simple.
How do I get a kid to have this thing hang around with them for a long time?
How do I get a kid to actually bond with it?
Most toys, you play for 15 minutes and then you put them in the corner until their batteries are dead. I wanted something that they would play with for a long time.
So how do you make that toy?
Well, there's rules. There's, you know, the size of the eyes. There's the distance of the top lid to the pupil, right?
Really?
You don't want any of the top of the white of your eye showing. That's freaky surprise.
Huh.
Now, when it came to the eyes, I had a choice with my one little mechanism. I could make the eyes go left or right or up and down. So it's up to you. You can make the eyes go left or right or up and down. Do you have a
left
preference?
Left or right or up and down. I think I would choose left or right.
Okay, so
I'm not
now,
sure why I say that, but that's...
All right, so let's take that apart.
Let's.
If you're talking to somebody and they look left or right while they're talking to you, what does that communicate?
Oh, shifty.
Yeah, or they're trying to find the person who's more important than you behind you.
Oh, so okay, now I want to change my answer now. I want to say up and down.
Okay.
You would.
If you look at a baby and the way a baby looks at their mother, they track from eyebrows to mouth. They track up and down on the face.
So had you made Furby look left and right rather than up and down, it would have probably flopped?
No, it wouldn't have flopped. It would just sucked a little. It's like a bad actor who uses his arms too much.
Yeah.
You'd notice it, and it would keep you from just being in the moment.
But what is the thought behind that? Is it that you want to convince the child that the thing they're using is fill in the blank? What?
Yeah, alive.
Hmm.
There's three elements, I believe, in creating... something that feels to a human like it's alive. Well, I kind of rewrote Asimov's laws. The first is it has to feel and show emotions.
Were you drawing on your mime days for that?
Of course.
Those experiences in the park?
Of course. You really break the body into parts, and you realize you can communicate physically. So if your chest goes up and your head goes up and your arms grow up, you know, that's happy. If your head is forward and your chest is forward, you're kind of this angry guy.
And he says when it came time to make Furby, he took that gestural language and focused it on Furby's ears.
And the ears, when they went up, that was surprise. And when they went down, it was depression.
Oh. So that's rule number one.
The second rule is to be aware of themselves and their environment. So if there's a loud noise, it needs to know that there was a loud noise.
So he gave the Furby little sensors so that if you go, it'll say,
"Hey, loud sound."
The third thing is change over time. Their behaviors have to change over time. That's a really important thing. It's a very powerful thing that we don't expect, but when it happens, we go, wow. And so one of the ways we showed that was acquiring human language.
Yeah. When you first get your Furby, it doesn't speak English. It speaks Furbish. This kind of baby talk language. And then the way it's programmed, it will sort of slowly over time replace its baby talk phrases with real English phrases. So you get the feeling that it's learning from you.
Though, of course, it's not.
No. It has no language comprehension.
Right.
So
right.
You've got these three rules.
Feel and show emotions. Be aware of their environment. Change over time.
And oddly enough, they all seem to come together in that moment you turn the Furby upside down. Because it seems to know it's upside down. So it's responding to its environment. It's definitely expressing emotion. And as you hold it there, what it's saying... It's changing over time, because it starts with hey, and then it goes to meese, and then it starts to cry. And all this adds up, so that when you're holding the damn toy, even though you know it's just a toy, you still feel...
discomfort.
These creatures push our Darwinian buttons.
That's Professor Sherry Turkle again, and she says if they push just enough of these buttons, then something curious happens. The machines slip across this very important line.
From what I call relationships of projection to relationships of engagement. With a doll, you project onto a doll what you need the doll to be. If a young girl is feeling guilty about breaking her mom's china, she puts her Barbie dolls in detention. With robots, you really engage with the robot as though they're a significant other, as though they're a person.
So the robot isn't your story. The robot is its own story, or it's
going to be... Exactly. And I think what we're forgetting as a culture is that there's nobody home. There's nobody home.
Well, I have to ask you, when is something alive? Furby can remember these events. They affect what he does going forward, and it changes his personality over time. He has all the attributes of fear or of happiness, and those are things that add up and change and change his behavior and how he interacts with the world. So how is that different than us?
Wait a second, though. Are you really going to go all the way there?
Absolutely.
This is a toy with servo motors and things that move its eyelids and 100 words.
So you're saying that life is a level of complexity. If something is alive, it's just more complex.
I think I'm saying that life is driven by the need to be alive and by these base primal animal feelings like pain and suffering.
I can code that.
What do you mean you can code that?
Anyone who writes software, and they do, can say, okay, I need to stay alive. Therefore, I'm going to come up with ways to stay alive. I'm going to do it in a way that's very human, and I'm going to do it. We can mimic these things.
But
I'm
if saying a Furby that, is miming the feeling of fear, it's not the same thing as being scared. It's not feeling scared.
It is.
How is it?
It is. It's, again, a very simplistic version. But if you follow that trail, you wind up with our neurons sending, you know, chemical things to other parts of our body. Our biological systems, our code, is at a chemical level incredibly dense and evolved over millions of years. But it's just complex. It's not something different than what Furby does. It's just more complex.
So would you say then that Furby is alive? In the way
at
that
his
I
level,
think, at his level.
Yes. Yeah, at his level. Would you say a cockroach is alive? Would you
yes,
say,
but when I kill a cockroach, I know that it's feeling alive, pain. Okay, so we went back and forth and back and forth about this.
You were so close to arguing my position. You just said to him, like,
yeah,
it's not
feeling. I know. Like, emotionally, I am still in that place. But intellectually, I can't rule out what he's saying. That if you can build a machine that is so, such a perfect mimic of us, in every single way, and it gets complex enough, eventually it will be like a Turing test pass, and we just, the difference between us maybe
is
not so.
I can't go there. I can't imagine, like the fellow who began this program, who fell in love with the robot, that attachment wasn't real. The machine didn't feel anything like love back.
In that case, it didn't. But imagine a Svetlana that is so subtle and textured and, to use his word,
complex
in the way that people are. At that point, what would be the difference?
I honestly can't imagine a machine achieving that level of rapture and joy and love and pain. I just don't think it's machine possible. And if it were machine possible, it somehow still stinks of something artificial.
It's a thin interaction. And I know that it feels...
Simulated thinking is thinking. Simulated feeling is not feeling. Simulated love is never love.
Exactly.
But I think what he's saying is that if it's simulated well enough, it's something like love.
One thing that was really fascinating to me was my husband and I gave a Furby as a gift to his grandmother who had Alzheimer's. And she loved it. Every day for her was kind of new and somewhat disorienting. But she had this cute little toy that said, "Kiss me. I love you." And she thought it was the most delightful thing. And its little beak was covered with lipstick because she would pick it up and kiss it every day. And she didn't actually have a long-term relationship with it. For her, it was always a short-term interaction. So what I'm describing as a kind of thinness for her was just right, because that's what she was capable of.
Thanks to Freedom Baird and to Caleb Chung.
And thanks to Professor Sherry Turkle, who has a new book. It's called Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other.
More information on anything you heard on our website, radiolab.org.
You're only living an imitation of life.
Start of message.
Use support for NPR.
Support from NPR comes from NPR stations and the William and Bora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world.
On the web at hewlett.org.
The Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness.
On the web at melvilletrust.org. And Plowshares Fund, dedicated to helping build a safe, secure, and nuclear weapon-free world. At plowshares.org.
This is NPR.
This is NPR.